Today, we have one of those amazing, special, outstanding leaders from our industry who truly is a great asset to the entire industry, but most importantly to Chime and our Chime Foundation. He again, like so many of our previous podcast speakers, he has that same illness that we all have, the inability to say no. He's the CEO of First Health Advisory and has over 26 years of leadership experience in software and IT services, and more specifically, with his company now in cybersecurity and risk management for both commercial and government entities. He is sat on our AHIS, our Cybersecurity Association board, for over 3 years and is absolutely a stalwart leader for us in Washington in our advocacy efforts as we try to continue to bring attention to cybersecurity and cybersecurity needs. He is one of our faculty members on our cybersecurity programs. He is certified both as a information security leader as well as through our foundation security certification program as well. Carter, it is amazing to have you on the program. Welcome.
Russ, you're too kind. Thank you so much. And thank you to all friends of Chime. It's really an honor to be a part of this series that's brought an amazing diversity of leaders to this seat that I have a ton of respect for. And of course, your interviewing prowess rivals, in my mind, Barbara Walters. And so proud to be here.
Wow. Never been compared to Barbara Walters and probably never will again. Hey, first and foremost, how are you doing? How's your wonderful wife and daughter doing? And really, how's the whole team at First Health Advisory doing during these kind of tough times?
Yeah, you know, we're doing well. Still home office and, my daughter's in school. And so, she's not an age that can be vaccinated, but, still concerned about that. But we're doing well. Business is bonkers right now. As you can imagine, being in this field every day is an adventure, and things are going very well. And I'm just trying to keep up and serve our clients in the best way we know how.
Well, why don't we start off with that? Tell us a little bit about First Health Advisory, what you all do, kind of what the services you provide, just so we can kind of set a context as you as one of our industry leaders.
Yeah, First Health Advisory, our history is in EHR and integration and HIT. And about 7 years ago, we made a shift to build upon that in cybersecurity and saw some things that ultimately needed to be addressed before it became a very hot issue. Today, we are experts in asset orchestration, risk management. We do a lot of vulnerability management. We do managed security services for small, medium, and very large IDNs. We also help retail health entities. We do work in the government, at Defense Health Agency, and VA. And so there's a lot of work to be done. Our philosophy, Russ, is really any digital transformation initiative that you have must include looking at security and risk as it relates to those initiatives. And that's where we play.
Well, you were really in kind of the cool space of the market before it was cool with cybersecurity. I remember when I was a CIO, cybersecurity were just the people that issued out passwords kind of hiding in the basement. And now cybersecurity is everywhere in healthcare. Why are we in such unprecedented times from a cyber attack, ransomware, so many other things that are out there? It's created its own language, actually, at this point. Why are we in such a weird spot, especially in healthcare?
Yeah, great question. I think there could be multiple books written on this issue. And as you know, Russ, I interact with the Chime audience daily. I'm proud to say that awareness is very high amongst CIOs and obviously CISOs, and understanding what needs to be done to improve capability and maturity in healthcare security programs. It's a necessity for all digital transformation efforts, as I've noted. Yet when I talk to COOs, chief medical officers, chief nursing officers, CFOs, and boards, as part of the work that we do, there's still a lack of impetus. And I'm generalizing here, but each national event tends to move the needle for one reason or another. So you think about some of the major health systems that have had, you know, some really hard, you know, moments here in the last couple of months, or even Colonial Pipeline. Those events that make the national news do move the needle. But for those that have an understanding of what should be done, it kind of becomes a cost issue and even a talent issue for that matter. And if the budget's not there, the resources are not there, the risk then becomes an accepted risk as organizations just continue to focus on the provision of care. And there's a whole other set of issues when we look at nation state and those residing in countries that are providing, in a way, immunity of sorts for their people to terrorize our health systems. And our ability to fight that's limited because the onus, and too much of the time, falls upon the health entities themselves. There's great work, no doubt, being done by information sharing organizations, 405D, CISA, AHA, you know, these sort of federal entities, I believe, need to be a catalyst for change here. And it's possible. I see it every day, but doing nothing in your organizations is more risky and costly every day.
Well, let's talk about one of those hot spots in cybersecurity. And I think this is really when you all made your organizational pivot. This is one of your big areas of focus, and that's kind of medical equipment, biomedical equipment, physical equipment inside of these organizations. And why is this an area in particular that seems to be, I'll just use the term I used a few minutes ago, such a hot spot and an area of risk and concern?
Yeah, I think some of those challenges are well known to the CISOs that we interact with and many of the CIOs that we interact with. But, you know, ultimately, these devices, they're special devices that you don't see in other industries, obviously, which makes healthcare somewhat unique when you talk about medical devices. The life cycle of those devices and turnover makes it more challenging to just go out and buy a new MRI machine or a C-arm that might cost millions of dollars, yet they have embedded operating systems that are basically at end of life or end of service, or they're just unsupported. And so you have to find special ways, and not to get technical, to protect those devices. And you know, ultimately, there are new technologies out there that are giving you visibility into, you know, where those devices are and ultimately how to protect those devices. And so it is somewhat of a unique challenge, and we call it a blind spot in our industry. But, you know, the old adage is you can't protect what you can't see or what you know you don't have. And that's changing. And so organizations that are very forward thinking here are using those technologies to their advantage, not only to get visibility, but to better understand how those devices are operating, how those devices behave, and how to then reduce risk around those devices. And you know, we're helping sort of build programs, because you really have to look at it from a programmatic perspective to wrap all of those activities into an initiative that reduces enterprise risk, not just cyber risk, but patient safety risk and enterprise risk.
Yeah, and well, you know, it's interesting when you think about this concept of cybersecurity and for lack of a better term, the bad people out there in the world constantly, and it could be domestic or foreign, as you said, it could be all over the place. People are trying to do this. You know, if somebody physically attacked us, you'd call the police, you'd call the military, and they would respond accordingly. And in this world, it's just because it's bits and bytes, it seems so foreign to us. But I think more and more it's starting to get government attention. Previous administration, this administration, it's just ramped up over a period of time where there does seem to be some shaping and some reactions from the government. I'd love to hear your thoughts on government and administration's actions, how it's affecting anything in there, from funding to resilience to access to whatever it might be.
Yeah, and this is an area that I'm really passionate about, and in being from Washington, D.C., you know, for good or for bad, I want to be involved and I want to be an advocate for the industry. And time has been amazing, you know, in terms of, you know, providing that opportunity for a firm like ours that's an advisory group. And we see a lot of different organizations. They have different risk postures, they have different budgets, they have different overall visions for how they want to address this issue. But I am convinced that the government, needs to get involved. And HCIC provided a great scaffolding here to spurn the 405D program, as I mentioned earlier, an adoption of the NIST framework and the ability to score against that framework continues to accelerate and provide statistics on where your program is. And when we assess organizations, you need to know where your program is, in terms of spending or against your peers and against that framework. And I believe it's past time to get some increased level of support for healthcare and critical infrastructure healthcare from the government. In recent executive orders, Russ, have focused on water supply and transportation, and we're still trying to advocate for healthcare. And those things are a good start, but in my belief, healthcare supports all critical infrastructure. And so I don't know why it's not moving as quickly as possible, but there's still a lot of work to be done there. And I'm on a mission to bring attention to the need for incentives, not more penalties, but incentives for doing, let's call it, for lack of a better term right now, a meaningful use-like program for cyber resilience in healthcare critical infrastructure. And I'm convinced we can carry some lessons forward from meaningful use and how it was rolled out into a program like this that funds broad risk reduction for our field. I think, our weakest links are in the health systems that just don't do anything about it. And it's going to impact the entire industry.
So, we talk about, and as you just brought up good examples of different parts of our economic sectors, and some are getting more attention than others, but that's also true in healthcare. And we used to talk about the cyber divide or the digital divide, and those with more resources, more money, more opportunities, more technical people would be ahead from a digital perspective. But what we're really seeing, and even our Digital Health Most Wired survey last year, and we haven't seen this year's results yet, pointed out that there really is a cyber divide as well. Those organizations, they have ability to hire a high-skilled CISO and put together an entire risk model of what you've talked about, seem to be quite a bit ahead from a cyber resilience, cyber reaction perspective, and those that are not, the small and mid-size. Can the small and mid-size provide the cybersecurity services they need to keep up with the threat?
Yeah, it is a great question. I believe the answer is yes. Something needs to be done. Again, deferring that risk or accepting that risk is not the best solution holistically in terms of approaching this problem. And we look at things like spend relative to IT. So some organizations are spending 1% of their IT budget, where other organizations are in upwards of 7%. Of their IT budget spend on security. Now, if you compare that to other industries, manufacturing, finance, they're in the 12 to 14% range in some instances. Yet, healthcare is very different. When we talked about the medical device issue, but I like to compare healthcare to other healthcare organizations in terms of their spending, what their score is relative to the framework, and also, ultimately to their peers. And so these smaller and mid-sized health systems, they have to do something. You just can't sit on your hands and say, well, I hope we don't have a bad day. And if we do, we'll up our cyber insurance and, we'll be ready to respond. That's not a good answer anymore with all of the, the things that happen from a reputational harm perspective. We get some of these, tort cases where the cost of the ransom recovery is 1/10 of what the cost of the civil suits that we're seeing in this area. And so I do believe with some interesting and unique approaches, these health systems can bring their level of resilience up, whether it's through help on the outside or managed like service or whatever that may be, to find the talent they need to do something. That's the message I want to convey, is let's do something. And 405B, I'm a huge advocate of that program because it's really prescriptive, Russ, in terms of, okay, you don't know where to start. Here's a great place to do that, to start.
So obviously we can't spend as much as banking or investment or big manufacturing. That would essentially bankrupt the low margin healthcare, despite how expensive most people think it is. It's actually a very low margin, for lack of a better term, business in healthcare, especially acute business. There's a lot of overhead costs. So the question then really comes, how do you balance spend versus risk? And could you actually spend too much money in today's industry? I think you've almost answered a little bit, but how do you balance that thought between how much I could spend and the risk, knowing that the bad people are always going to be a couple steps ahead of us?
Yeah, this is a growing topic. I was going to say growing concern, but when I talk to CISOs out there and we discuss this topic, right? We talked about how you can gauge your spend from a framework perspective, from a budget ratio perspective. And what happens is some organizations, you can look at those scores, and whether it's kind of on a 1 to 5 score, that you're looking at high trust, or you're on a kind of, some organizations use kind of a credit score because it really is put into context for a board that knows, okay, 850 is the top score in credit and 300 is the lowest score. But what we like to do is ultimately say, well, what type of point solutions do you have? Is there duplicity there? Is there overlap? Are you on the scale of, ultimately your framework on the very high end? Are you excellent, right? Sometimes you don't necessarily want to be in that range because maybe you're spending too much money. You want to be in the good range. And so there's a lot of discussions around this particular topic, how much security is too much. The other side of it is the control. So there's the dollar side of it and there's the controls. And I'm going to invoke Carl West because I just love Carl, and he speaks with so much knowledge and experience. But when he talks about frictionless security, that other side of it, if you put too much security on the practitioners in the healthcare organizations, they're going to revolt, right? He tells the story of, the chief medical officer came to him and said, I have to spend 9 extra seconds per patient interaction because of you, Carl, and you need to change that. And when Carl talks about frictionless security, you have to think about, is there too much security that impedes the provision of care? And so we think of it in two ways, one on the dollar spend and the other on the controls that are placed in the healthcare organizations. And that's becoming a bigger issue now in understanding how you hit the mark there and the right, the balance.
So you talked about people like Carl, and there's so many great CISOs that are out there. And we even at Chime talk about this new modeling for the CIO, CIO 3.0, a transformational leader driving digital change across all of healthcare. But we're seeing the role of the CISO change as well. It's not the kind of super, cyber person hiding in the dark in the background. It's exactly what we really need to happen is this leadership role. Tell us what you're seeing happening with so many of the CISOs you're talking to and this really executive leadership role in charge of security inside organizations.
Yeah, I consider myself, for us, very fortunate that I get to interact every day with many CISOs and just to listen. If I want to do something very well, it's be a good listener. I think that role of the CISO, I'm seeing it change and become a part of the core leadership team, I believe, is essential, and the skills necessary to succeed in that type of role are changing as a result. And Chime's, certainly leading in this area. When we think about the boot camps that are available to CISOs, the certifications, in terms of just strategy and leadership related to CISOs, not technical, but strategic in nature. Those are the qualities that we saw CIOs transition to 20 and maybe 15 years ago, to your point, going from that 1.0 to 2.0 to 3.0 CIO. I'm now seeing CISOs have to go through that transformation from the 1.0 technical person to the 2.0 and even 3.0 executive leader. I'm seeing this every day. I'm a believer that will rise to the challenge and great leaders will emerge in this area. They already are. And that's where I see the future of the CISO role going.
So a couple last questions here, and this is where I'm going to ask Carter maybe to put your leadership crystal ball kind of view on of this. And that is, as we see healthcare in a general sense, really changing, adopting digital strategies, engaging outside the traditional walls that have potentially come crumbling down in healthcare, it's now just kind of an entire world ecosystem out there. Where do you see healthcare in the next 3-5 years going? And for you in particular, in the services you provide, how does that play with cybersecurity?
Yeah, I use the term borderless provision of care, right? In the last 18 months has taught us that things can change very quickly and you need to be able to adapt and you need to bake in a risk management into everything that you're doing technologically, in my mind, in the enterprise to be able to address all of the challenges that are going to come our way. And if you're not thinking in those terms, you are going to fall, behind in terms of competitive advantage. And so we talk about that a lot. Are you protecting your greatest assets, whether they're physical assets, whether they're your employees, whether they're your patients and your customers? Are you protecting in the best way possible? The duty of care comes up a lot, but what is reasonable and appropriate when you think about what you're going to do from a security and privacy perspective? And I don't want to get into all the Cures Act stuff and interoperability, but these issues are going to bubble up. And if you're not prepared for them, you're going to find yourselves in some really difficult spots in terms of being competitive with your peers that are prepared for them. So those are the things that we think of in looking forward a couple of years out. I think there's a lot more to come in terms of, where interoperability takes us and how security fits into that conversation.
So this is the cool part. I get to let you be, I don't want to say king for a day. Let's say a congressman for the day, a senator for the day. Let's even think grandiose, president for a day. You have some significant positional authority in this last question. What do you want to focus on for the next couple of years? What do you want Chime to focus on? What should we care about? We could do a million things. What should the healthcare industry, and therefore by default Chime, what should we focus on the next couple of years?
Yeah, it feels like we've been focusing on this for a while, but continued advocacy and awareness on the issue is going to move the needle towards where we want to get in terms of critical infrastructure resiliency. And if I were pulling all the levers, I would provide a program, an incentive program for organizations that just don't have the means to do something. They know that something needs to be done, but there's just no budget there. There's no incentive. There's no pathway to be able to come up to just a baseline, a floor level, resiliency in their healthcare organizations. And these, might be small entities, critical access, rural hospitals, large physician practices that say, hey, we just don't have the budget. But if there was an incentive to get them to move towards that, and again, 405D is, the potential foundation for that. NIST is the foundation for that. That's what I would focus on. That's what I really want to do, in terms of what Chime is doing in Washington is to get those senators, to get those congressmen, to get those individuals more aware of the challenge and how are we going to address it going forward.
Well, Carter, unfortunately, our time is up. It's always great to catch up with you. But more importantly, thank you for all you do for our industry. Thank you for all you do for those fighting and truly fighting for the security and well-being of our health systems and the patients and the communities that are out there. You are truly one of our great heroes. Thanks for being on the program today.
Always a pleasure, Russ. Thanks for this opportunity. And I hope that those that are listening and have made it all the way through this podcast find just one little nugget of useful information as a result. Thanks so much.
Well, and we'd like to thank you, as always, our listeners, for joining us for this program and this episode of the Leader to Leader podcast. As always, please take care. Please consider getting a vaccination now. It's not just for you. It's for all those people around you you love and care about. Please take care. Stay home if you can. Be safe, and God bless.